If it's all right,
hang on, I'll try and mute. Yeah.
There we go. How's that?
Yeah, hello. Perfect.
Very good. Where are you?
In the training room.
In the training room, yeah.
Wow. This is very exciting, isn't it? Who's there?
One of us is probably at home.
Okay. Very good. Oh, well, very nice to see you. This is a most strange experience for me, I must say. I've never spoken to a group of people like this, with you all in one place. You can mute yourselves and say nasty things about me, can't you?
Well, I don't think we can.
We can put it in the chat if we're careful to send it to individuals.
Oh, yes, make sure it doesn't come to me. That's a good point. And are you Is this a little break at the moment, or what's happening now?
We've just had our worship and now we're gathering to listen to you. So.
Oh, okay. You've been praying for something worthwhile in the next little spell.
Well, we're assuming you're going to talk about fences and how to creosote them. So that's not what you're talking about.
I only wish that what I'm going to say would be as useful as learning how to creosote a fence.
Boundaries are very important.
Are we waiting for others or...
Well, we can start.
Yeah, I thought we could wait till 11:15, which was the scheduled start time, just in case a couple want to join us.
I mean, we're very pleased to see you, Jonathan. Yes. Thank you very much. And within this group, I don't think I need to say it, but I was going to say, you know, anything said within this room is obviously confidential and doesn't get repeated outside it. Just in case. He comes up with really exciting examples of where they broke boundaries.
Oh, yeah, very good. Oh, we can really talk about them now, can't we?
I should just warn you, Leslie's asked that we record these sessions, so...
Okay, oh, all right then.
I said again. So there's a boundary already.
So how many people are... So there's a screen for John Arnold. And how many are there in the room there?
Six.
Okay. I can see four of you. The other two are obviously naked or asleep or something.
Yes, sleep.
Pretty good. And this day that you're having is a morning's worth or a whole day?
A whole day.
Whole day and what's the sort of I didn't quite gather from Leslie what the sort of main focus of your day is. Is it all about boundaries or is it about other things too?
It's in time together. Yeah.
And then somebody decided euthanasia.
What's sorry, I missed what the purpose of your day is. What's the title of the day?
It's about getting back together.
Okay.
That's happened in the last 18 months, 2 years.
Okay, very good. And can I just ask, how can you see me? Am I on a screen or something?
Yeah.
Am I? Okay.
You've got a more discreet background than some people. You know, it's nearly as good as Instagram for seeing what people's decor is and so on.
Well, Leslie may have said that I'm, as you may know, I'm leaving All Saints in a couple of weeks, and so I'm down at the house that we're moving to. I've just had to come down to bring a bunch of furniture.
Oh.
And so I'm in a room, and we're having all sorts of work done here. So I'm in a room. I've got a pile of carpets down there, and then a whole load of boxes, and then along the wall are just where the builders have made holes. So it's quite a strange place to be.
So is it exciting or stressful?
Both. Yes, exciting, scary, stressful. Yeah, all of those three. Should we start then? Do we think we've got all we're going to get?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So we're for the next sort of hour or so, we're going to think about boundaries. And I mean, what would be really useful would be to hear from you. And I don't know whether you need a bit of time to. I sometimes find in these things that I need the speaker to sort of waffle on for 10 minutes while I gather my thoughts. And then I begin to clarify on where the topic might be of interest or relevance to me. So what I'll do is I'll ask this question, I'll ask two questions now, and then I'll ask them at the end of my little few thoughts. And then I wondered whether what we might do is just sort of brainstorm together and think about these things, because I didn't tell Leslie. I thought I better not, but I'm not really very good at this sort of thing. This kind of leading this sort of group's not really one of my strengths, and I operate better when we're in a conversation. But I have gathered together a few sort of thoughts just to waffle on. When I was first ordained. The church I was in was an enormous building, absolutely massive. I mean, really big. I'm afraid even bigger than your worship space, which I always think of as a huge worship space. And we used to stand in the middle, and behind, when I preached the sermon, you'd stand in the middle, and behind me there was the altar, and then above the altar was this vast window that went right up to the ceiling. I mean, the same height as your worship space. So a big, big space. And there was a sort of stained glass window behind me, huge stained glass window. And I used to preach, and I could see people looking past my head at the stained glass window. And I was quite certain that they weren't listening to a word I was saying, but I was kind of providing some sort of background hum for them to be able to sort of think about their thoughts. And actually, I found that I didn't mind that at all. I thought, well, I think they're having holy thoughts with God, and they're you know, sorting their life out. And if they need me to provide a bit of sort of lift music for them, then that's fine. That's what I'll do. So I'll just offer you a bit of lift music for a while, and then we can get back to what's on your mind. But my two questions for you to think about, and maybe to respond to straight away. The first is just to ask, what area of boundaries are particularly relevant to you? If they are relevant, I mean, it may be something that's not been troubling you, but when we talk about boundaries, do you feel that you're good with boundaries and that you have clear boundaries and you keep to them? Or do you feel that there are places where you struggle? I think it would be helpful for us all to hear together what those areas might be. I mean, I've thought of a couple, but when I say boundaries and are you any good at them, if you say no, well, I'm not really, in what sphere are you not very good at them? Does anybody feel able to chuck out an answer?
I find it difficult to marry boundaries with kind of going the extra mile for God.
Yeah.
And sometimes it seems like those two things contradict each other.
Yeah. Very good.
I spent quite a lot of time living within a very small community, and I was always very cautious who I confided in, because that way, if it got out round the whole circle, you know, we'd talked out of turn. My late husband was brought up in a manse, so he was brought up on what you hear at the dinner table, you do not repeat. And our daughters, from quite a young age, were brought up on that. Because had they gone to school and said, Mum and Dad were wondering if the education advisor will get drunk, well, it might have been the case that several of their friends' parents were thinking the same thing. It wouldn't be desirable if it got out in public. So I think I would say that my daughters and a friend who was a social worker and understands confidentiality. I assume they are within a circle where anything I say to them will not go any further. But I'm a Samaritan volunteer, and they are, I would say, obsessional about boundaries. Barry, who some of you may know, tells me off because there's a scenario that I find funny. And he says it's not funny. But he makes the point very cleverly, because there's somebody who's lonely and visiting Samaritans quite often. And he starts taking an interest in one of the young male Samaritans and one of the young female Samaritans, and he's doing his best to matchmake. And it shows how innocently the amount of information he manages to get that man. Now, okay, this was from the days when you'd be operating in a much smaller area, but it is a very good example of how you have to be careful not to let the slightest thing slip. Yeah, so I'm hoping that provides some background waffle, Jonathan, and then.
Okay, yeah. Confidentiality, yeah. Anything else?
I would like to add that I maybe it's a bit like Maggie's saying, but about how much to reveal of where I am thinking in situations, because there must be a lot of me in that conversation necessarily. But so it's knowing when to talk and when not to, I suppose. When to reveal? I don't quite know what the words are, but I don't want me to get in the way.
Okay, yeah, self-revelation, yeah. Okay.
Self-revelation, what did you say?
Well, self-revelation in terms of how much of yourself you reveal, yes. How much you let on, yeah. Okay. Any other thoughts? That's great to be starting with.
I would add boundaries of saying no when people ask you to do things.
Of saying no?
Yes. So my inclination, if somebody asks me to do something, is to say, okay, yes, I'll do it. Even if I don't want to, or I've got, you know, other things, and especially when it's somebody like, say, Leslie or...
Leslie did ask me to say that you should never say no to her. You should always say yes. Absolutely right. No, that's, I mean, the hardest word in the English dictionary is no, isn't it?
Well, within church circles, outside church circles and possibly charity circles, a lot of people seem to be very good at saying no. We should follow their example.
Can you substitute no for pardon? Somebody asked you to.
But it's partly about negotiating. No, I can't do that, but I will do so and so.
Yeah, yeah, okay. I mean, those are really good things to be thinking about. Okay, and just my second question was just to ask. When I say boundaries, when we're thinking about them, is your, you know, just notice what your initial reaction is. Is it that a boundary is a good thing, that it's going to protect you, it's going to keep you safe, it's going to defend you against difficulty? Boundaries are something that you embrace. Or is it that when you think about boundaries, you feel it's a negative thing. There are things which are going to restrict you, things which are going to limit you, things which will exclude you from something. Because I think how we feel about boundaries, whether we think they're good things essentially or bad things, whether we think they're easy things or should be easy or things that we want to embrace or things that we're slightly, you know, frightened of. So in particular, thinking about saying no, you find it hard to say no in certain circumstances. So there's that would indicate a level of negativity about it, really, that it's something that you don't necessarily embrace warmly, then because I think how our what sort of essential attitude we have to that will indicate how well we can use them. And I want to suggest that using boundaries and having them as an essential item in our starter kit for the day is really, really important. Actually, we depend upon boundaries all the time. And when we either try to ignore them or pretend that they aren't necessary, we're actually not being true to ourselves, because we want boundaries all the time. We need boundaries for a start, to protect us from each other, and to protect us from the vagaries of human nature. We have laws. They are boundaries. They stop people from taking things that belong to us. They tell us how fast we should drive in order to protect ourselves and other people. Laws tell us where we can and cannot go. They allow us to keep our property safe from other people's nefarious intent. So we actually, our society, our life, I think in many ways is based upon having boundaries, and boundaries being a good thing, a necessary thing. And I think something that none of us would, I think, want to trade. We wouldn't want to do without them when we think of it in those stark and clear terms. So my first thought is that boundaries are essential. They're there all the time. They protect us from each other when we need protecting. And then I think they protect us from ourselves and are very useful in that. I heard the other day a story of a family that's having some difficulty with their children. I've got two quite young children who are developing some quite difficult mental health needs. And when I was spending some time talking with one of the parents, they said, you know, it's absolutely terrible. We say they should go to bed after tea at 7 o'clock, and they just don't go. And it's absolutely terrible. They're still up at 10 o'clock at night. And it was almost funny in the sense that the way the person was describing it to me was as if they had no control whatsoever over the situation, and that it was just a terrible injustice being done to them. And I more and more found myself thinking, well, you've just got to make them go to bed. That's where they need to be. And because boundaries around very simple things, around when the day starts and when the day ends, were not being enforced by these parents, the children are beginning to develop some mental health difficulties and are beginning to not sort of to learn very well. They're not doing well at school, and they are becoming quite out of control, and they're not developing a sense of where the world is and where the world isn't, where they can go, where they can't go. And what's happening for those children, it seemed to me, is that they're not learning to self-regulate, because they're not being taught to self-regulate. And so they're not developing internal boundaries about the way they are allowed to be in the world and the way they're not allowed to be in the world, and the way the world is a good and easy part, because given the opportunity, they will just stay up all night because they're stimulated and they they don't want to go to sleep, it's too much fun being awake, and yet they need boundaries being set for them so that they can learn to self-regulate and look after themselves. So boundaries aren't just things which allow us to protect ourselves from each other, they're also things which help us to protect ourselves from ourselves, of which some of the things that you've highlighted earlier, I think, are relevant and part of.
I have difficulty with your example of the children who have mental difficulties, because I think the attempt to impose regulation within the family is not necessarily the answer, because the problem is much more deep-seated than what has happened in the family. And I'm thinking of my granddaughters, who had major problems with eating and school attending, and that needed someone to be alongside her, but not saying you've got to go to bed or anything like that. And I'm thinking of our neighbour opposite, whose daughter was unable to attend school because she was so nervous. She was looked after by her mother, who took her out on a drive at 10 o'clock every night, because that's the only thing that she could, time that she could be alongside her and talk with her. And that went on for 2 or 3 years. In the meantime, they got absolutely no support from the local authority because they had no resources. And the whole situation would have been disastrous had they not responded to the situation as it was, and not trying to impose. These were regulated, well-regulated families with loving support throughout. And so it emerged because of, there is something in society which is causing that problem.
Sure. I'm sure that's the case. You used very important words there, well-regulated. And I think my point is, the point I was trying to make was that in this case, this family were not well-regulated. And because of it, it was then creating difficulties for members of the family. And the point being that we need regulation. We need regulation to protect us from each other. And we need regulation in order to develop a sense of safety and security within ourselves, so that we can grow and develop healthily. One other little story I wanted to tell to help make a point. My brother-in-law lives in America. In America, the houses, very often, they just one house and then there's a patch of ground and then there's another house. It's more of a thing I found in England, that we have fences around our properties. But he had dogs. He has five dogs. And so he needs a way of letting them out into the garden without them just careering off around the neighborhood. And so what he did, and it's quite a common thing, is that he had installed in his garden around the edge of his property an underground electric wire. And each dog wears a collar that has a small electric charge in it. And if the dogs go near the wire, the underground wire, the thing around their neck picks up a signal and it gives them a very small electric shock. So they then decide not to go near the wire, and it keeps them in. It's an invisible boundary. All that is, except one dog who just thought, I don't care whether it zaps me or not, and careers across the fence on its own anyway. But it was it was an amazing thing to see these dogs wandering around, and none of them would go near the where the invisible fence was, because they knew that was going to hurt them. So it kept them inside. And I think that's one of the things about boundaries, is that they are invisible, and that very often they're unseen things that we have to regulate within ourselves, which in part makes them difficult. And one of the things that we can think about is why keeping boundaries is difficult, and what is it that we're feeling challenged by, that we break our boundaries, and but why is it? What's drawing us to do that?
On that point, society has changed by the dog who's prepared to go across the barrier. I'm not saying one shouldn't have barriers, but revolution is created by the dog who says, why should I have to stay within this area?
Well, I guess it's that depends on what the wire is that's being crossed. If it's if the breaking of boundaries or barriers is for what might be considered a good thing, then yes, you're absolutely right. I guess is the dog a revolutionary or a terrorist? I suppose that's the question, isn't it, that we could wonder about. But I see your point. Yeah.
Boundaries you're talking about, they're all imposed from outside the individual or the dog or whatever. And I maybe I'm too idealistic, but I would hope that from early on that the encouragement is that you learn to set your own boundaries and then keep to them, or discover what boundaries you need, or appreciate what boundaries are there and why they're there. And not just do them because you shouldn't, not just go over this invisible boundary that like the dogs had because you get sapped, but because you know that's not what you should do. And obviously the dogs can't know that necessarily, but as humans, then we should realize that there are some boundaries that are there whether anybody imposed them or not, either because we realize they're good for us or because this is just what you need. And thinking of stories, I have a friend, when her children were young, she told them they shouldn't do something, to eat fruit which hadn't been washed, not to just take it from the bowl. And I find it really difficult to watch. This child didn't take any notice and just kept on doing it and did it once. And then they took another piece of fruit and they also weren't checked by the parent. And I don't mean to be rich with schadenfreude, but later on, that child was actually quite difficult. And I thought, well, actually, it was because early on, those boundaries which were imposed, which were in a way, you know, so you eat a piece of fruit that hasn't been washed, and maybe you get a slight upset tummy, then you realise that maybe that wasn't such a good idea. But it wasn't imposed early on. And I know that's from the outside, but surely eventually you want it that people realise that there are boundaries that they impose from within because they know that's what they should observe.
I don't want to be pedantic, but why didn't the mother wash the fruit before the head in the face?
Well, that's quite a different part of the story.
Yeah. I mean, I guess one of the thing we need to wonder about is why we find it difficult to keep our own boundaries. Why do we find it difficult to say no when we know that we're uncomfortable saying yes? What is the motivation? What's going on inside us that drives us to not look after ourselves? So for instance, let's think about one of the things that you raised about in particular in church, saying no, being able to keep boundaries there about your time and your space and energy, feeling that there's something that tugs at you that says, I don't want to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway because I've been asked to do it.
I think I would say pernicious strand within Christianity, that if you really love God,
You should be able to do anything you're asked to do, and God will support you to do it.
Or is it that where there's a part of us that's frightened that God's going to get cross at us, and that because God has asked us to do something, we feel we have to, we can't say no.
It's reaction. It's not because of God's reaction. It's because when you say no, people's reaction makes it so uncomfortable for you that actually it's easier just to say yes. That's my experience.
Pressure from within the church group?
Well, not necessarily church, just any environment. When you're asked to do something that you don't feel comfortable with, sometimes it's easier to just do it than to say no, because of the reaction or the kickback you get from other people. Now, whether it's your perception that's skewed or whether you really are getting that kind of kickback is another discussion. But that's where my boundary issues lie, is the result of my saying no, what happens?
Is that a fear of being disapproved of, fear of being disliked?
There's that, also people not accepting that you're allowed to say no.
So the trouble with that is it's self-perpetuating, because people think, oh, you know, she'll always cope with things, so I can ask her to do that. Whereas actually the person who regularly says no and or does things badly, people soon stop asking, yeah. Which I know is not desirable, but... Yeah.
I have a saying at All Saints, and nobody believes me that I mean it, but I do. And my saying is, never do anything in church that you don't want to do. And people laugh at me because they say, well, you don't mean that really, do you, Jonathan, because you've just asked me to do X and Y. But I do mean it, and I think it's really important, because otherwise we end up doing something begrudgingly, and we do something with resentment. And I think we have to ask ourselves whether doing something with resentment is... within a spiritual context, is a holy thing to do. I'm not sure that it is. In fact, I'm certain I believe it isn't. That I think we should only do things that we want to do. And I think God only wants us to do the stuff that we feel we want to do. That's not the same as saying that we're going to enjoy it necessarily. Because we do all sorts of things that we don't enjoy, but we do still want to do, because we think they're worthwhile. We want them to have happened, and we're prepared to take responsibility, our part, our share of the responsibility of making something happen. But being able to say no to stuff that we don't want to do, I think, is really important. I wonder whether it just drills into that terrible concept and word that we have often banding around religious circles, and that's guilt. We feel guilty for not doing something we've been asked to do, or not doing something that we think God wants us to do. Even if necessarily that's somebody else's interpretation of what God may want for us.
Changing the subject a bit, are we all conscious of what our boundaries are, or do we only find out when we're challenged? Do we actually sit down and think about what our boundaries are? Is that normal, or you just carry on until somebody challenges you, or you find of situation where you have to think about?
Well, I suppose they're things that we make ourselves, aren't they? I mean, obviously we don't make the laws of the land, you know, that sort of boundary. But in terms of Catherine's example of somebody asking her to do something, and her not feeling comfortable doing it, but feeling under pressure to do it. That's an internal thing, isn't it? That we have to make that decision about what it is or is not that we are prepared to do.
It's also how you behave. So.
How we what? Sorry.
Behave. That's a boundary. Is how you behave. I mean, it, in the same way as the person may be asking someone to do something, might be stretching the boundaries themselves to push somebody into doing something. How do you know?
Yeah.
How do you know how you should behave? Well, there's no rules about how you should behave, but you presumably set your own boundaries, and they come, as probably discussed earlier, from maybe how you were brought up or just by observing other people. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose that's something about our values, isn't it?
Yes. But I mean, you couldn't actually write down what your boundaries are, because you don't necessarily think about you having boundaries as such. You only realise them when people make or situations challenge them.
Do you not think you could write down, I mean, principles for what you want? I mean, obviously specifics gets a bit detailed, doesn't it? But I mean, let's think of. I don't know whether anybody wants to suggest a scenario, a boundary scenario. I don't want to. You've given Catherine. You've given us a good line of thinking here. I don't know whether you can think of a scenario where you felt your boundaries were crossed, or you found it difficult to say no.
As saying, I become particularly aware of my boundaries when someone are pushing them. I think we all kind of have a way we behave within ourselves, and we expect other people to do that. So you wouldn't go into someone's house and just storm through the front door. The boundary is you wait to be invited. And I think when someone's pushing something, where Jonathan's saying about, you feel, no, this doesn't feel right for me. It's that gut feeling that, and usually you don't even think about it, because people sit within those boundaries anyway within their own conduct. It's only when they're pushing them, you think, ah, you know, something's not right here. That's certainly my experience of that.
And do you find it, Holly, do you find it hard to say, to enforce those boundaries? Do you?
I'm getting better with it, definitely getting better. But yeah, I think it has. I think we were, I was brought up with two kind of people, please. And as a rescuer, to kind of rescue someone needs help, and, you know, I'd almost have to abandon myself to rescue them. And that was the kind of values of my family. And rescuing people never really works out very well from a boundary point of view. So as I've got older, I've got a lot better with the boundaries. But there are still times that it comes, you know, it can be really challenging.
What do you think the reason behind the rescuing was?
I think it's conditioning from childhood. I can come from a family where rescue is the, you know, that's the action, that's the family characteristic. We are strong people who step in and, you know, help out. And if that means going till midnight, you know, working till midnight to be able to help, or, you know, looking after someone's children, there is a family expectation of that is what you do. And that's what I mean. There's also a family expectation of, you abandon yourself to be able to serve others, and it's in the abandoning yourself that the boundary collapses. Mm. Yeah, and that's where I'm kind of still working. Actually, you know, people have the tools to work things out for themselves, and if I don't rescue and I hold my boundaries, I can still be supportive. I can still say, you know, I know that you're going to get through this, and I'm here to listen to you, to you and support you whenever you like. But I'm not going to, rescue and step in. But it's taken 40 years, but we're getting there.
I mean, you're describing there a family culture, and that is one of the forces that makes holding our boundaries difficult. If we are having to be countercultural to whether it be our family or our church or our community or whatever. We're going against what other people would normally have us do and what we're used to doing and what an expectation of us is. And I suppose that and the other word you use, the other phrase you use that's perhaps been around in the conversation, that's about people pleasing. Doing stuff because we can't bear not to make somebody else happy, or we find it very difficult to say no to them, to disappoint them. I wonder whether some of that is because we fear that they will think badly of us, they will feel badly of us. We want their affirmation. We want people to like us very understandably. So it's quite difficult to do something which is going to upset somebody, it's going to make them unhappy.
I think my people pleasing is more to the rescue kind of side of it, but people pleasing is also a form of rescue of can you do this? Oh yes, I'll just add it to my workload, sort of thing. So it's part of that culture, like you said.
But is it an emergency where you're rescuing them? Or is it something they could sort out?
Oh, it could be anything. It could be anything where they're like, oh, I'm having trouble timing the school run with my work. Oh, okay, I'll do your school run for you 5 days a week, you know, because I'm around and I'm doing the school run anyway. It could literally be anything. Yeah. I'll buy an extra thing at the supermarket for you and then drive out my way to drop it to your house because I'm going to be in the supermarket. It's that continual service.
And does it count if you try and think about the effect you're having on that person?
So I'm... Not really. It's just, someone's got a problem. I've got to be the person to solve it. And realistically, I'm a single mum with three kids and my own business, I've got a lot going on. Mm. And all the people who I am rescuing are in much better, more secure situations than me. So that's what I mean. It's this abandonment of self to, you know, kind of just try. It's almost like if there's a rescue situation, it's uncomfortable for me. I've got to do something. I've got
And you're tracing it back to how you were brought up. But I think there can be situations where the rescuing is what helps the other person and stops things getting worse.
Yeah.
And there can be the rescuing where you're just encouraging them
Exactly, and I'm kind of getting much better at stepping away from the people who will say, oh, I've got this problem, I need this from the supermarket, and leave that long pause to be filled, so that I'll get it for you. I'm trying to kind of be the one who leaves the pause now and just say, oh, I'm sure you'll figure that out. Yeah.
But then you could say, if you're in a good place in yourself, that there's an opportunity for you to try and point out the other people that they need to look at their boundaries and that they're overstepping if you like their demands on other people which is unreasonable really and unacceptable but then it's hard because then you're not necessarily feeling great about telling somebody else about their boundaries or trying to educate them when you're actually already dealing with your own.
So somebody, I didn't quite catch you, but somebody used a really important word in that very good little discussion you were having then about when we don't enforce our boundaries, we enable other people to in their dysfunction, whatever it may be, whatever the incident may be, we can think with or we can be led to believe that we're being of service to them. But actually all we're doing is perpetuating them in a situation, perhaps, that is not good for them and is not encouraging their own sense of self-reliance. And that can be a very helpful thought when we're finding it difficult to enforce our boundaries, that actually we need to enforce them not just for us because it's exhausting or depleting us, but because actually we're making something worse for somebody or we're not allowing something to be better for them. I think that's a very important point.
And also you talked before about doing things because you want to do them. And I find that because I continually go over that boundary of, well, really I've got more than I can cope with myself, but then I'll still do it. And then I'm quite resentful about it. Mm. And so that's not really helping anybody very much.
Well, and I think if we put it in terms of faith, I think we really should ask ourselves, does God want us to be doing this resentfully? Mm. Is that actually what loving our neighbour is? And that, at the heart of, it feels to me that at the heart of quite a lot of what you're all saying in there is that there's a tension around being called to serve. We turn up on Sundays because we are Christian people, and our main aim is to love our neighbour as ourselves. You know, the first and greatest commandment, or the one that's like it. You know, love your neighbour as yourself. If your neighbour asks something of you, you should say yes. And that's a real tension for us when we're trying to hold our boundaries, because there's a sort of murky, foggy line of where does loving our neighbour as ourself, loving our neighbour kick in? You know, where does that stop, and where does our own needs, where should we hold that line?
Are you actually loving yourself? Because I realise that I do a lot of things, I have done in the past, I'm getting better now, but did a lot of things because I felt I needed to do them that actually were quite damaging to me. But so I wasn't loving my neighbour as myself, I was abandoning myself to love my neighbour, and that's not really love.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I think there's something maybe about playing around with that command. You know, love your neighbour as yourself. Maybe it should be love your neighbour and yourself. And that without the and yourself, you can't love your neighbour, because your love for your neighbour will be pretty poor if your love for yourself is pretty poor. So looking after ourselves has to be part of it, has to be part of the theology, if you like, of...
We're always ourselves, but we're also always a neighbour. So maybe that, for me, I've never thought about it that way before, but that's helpful, because then I'm not just focusing on me in any relationship. I'm focusing on how is this working lovingly between me as a neighbour as well as just me as myself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We've been discussing how you respond to people who push your boundaries. And that means then the person that's doing that has different boundaries to you anyway, doesn't it?
I'm sorry, could you say that again? I didn't quite catch it.
Discussing how we respond to people that push our boundaries, keep asking us to do things that we may not want to do. And that reflects on them and their boundaries, in the sense they obviously have a view that they should keep asking people to do things that they don't necessarily want to do. So how is that managed? Do you just have to live with that, or do you have to, is there a way, and who's right and who's wrong after facts? I don't know. How do you manage somebody's boundaries are different to yours? Do you challenge them? Walk away from them? Or are you right? So, do you have to reflect on whether or not your boundaries are right? So,
I guess we can only make our own decisions about what we feel is right for us, and right in the sense of also being wanting to live to values that we have ourselves, and we want to be the people that we want to be. So and we have to make a decision about where those lines get drawn. I can remember once seeing Russell Harty. Do you remember Russell Harty? He was on the telly in the 1980s. And I once saw him interviewed, and he said something like, there isn't anything that can't be said, and there isn't anyone that it can't be said to. And I think what he meant by that, there isn't anything that can't be said, and there isn't anyone that it can't be said to. I think what he meant was that how we say things is really important, and actually goes an awfully long way to being able to negotiate some of these difficult situations. Not the whole way, because you can't control how somebody else is going to respond by you saying, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that for you. And if they get cross about it, then they get cross about it. There's nothing you can do. But I think there can be ways of explaining why you may not want to do something, and trying to give a context, a gentle context, to why you don't feel able to do whatever it is that's being asked.
So I think that's interesting, because it kind of brings up for me that there isn't a set of boundaries that's right for everybody. We're all different and we have different circumstances and different backgrounds and whatever. So we need to expect that everybody's boundaries won't necessarily be the same. But then, like you're saying, we need to negotiate that in a gentle way rather than a way that puts people's backs up.
Yeah.
If we can.
And you can learn your boundaries. You learn your boundaries partly by the way in which you were brought up, I guess, but also by looking at other people and saying, well, I don't think that's right. So you learn by example and by exception, don't you? And so as you travel through life, I suppose, your boundaries change as you get older.
And boundaries will change depending on who you are or how, that sort of thing. So I think they're a fluid thing. They're constantly going to change.
Yeah.
That's my point, because where I'm at the moment is having my needs met. And for example, I've got this problem at the moment, which is a current problem. It's been ongoing for quite a while. I was brought up with no boundaries. Literally, it was hugging and kissing 1 minute, screaming and shouting the next. It was that light switch upbringing. And as a child, I had to have that, you know, I had a mum that was very ill emotionally. And I had to mold myself about that. Sadly, what's happened in adult life, I do the same. And I've carried that through into, it doesn't matter what's going on around me, I will adjust myself to her needs without even stopping and thinking about what my needs are, and certainly when it comes to boundaries. And it's like, and now that I've been learning what boundaries are, firstly, and secondly, what feels right for me and what is true from spiritual principles, emotional principles, whatever it might be, I'm literally getting the we don't like you, you've changed. Family first, which is something they always throw at me above everything. And what that means is whatever they say goes. And, you know, it's like they don't live in this country, but when they used to pop over, I'm a little boy again. I'm a toddler, like our daughter sitting here. And I adjust to them without really knowing what I want or what is good for me. And now I've changed. It's, you know, and literally I'm trying to, I guess it's that push-pull thing where I'm trying to show them that I've installed boundaries, but at the same time, they have no idea what boundaries are. So it's, you know, you can't be reasonable with unreasonable people. And it's under that umbrella, but it's difficult. But at the same time, I've held my boundaries, I've held my ground, I've stood my ground. I've kept it where I'm comfortable. And surprisingly, I'm not filled with all that guilt and shame about it, which I generally, it's like sending a text, you know, I don't feel comfortable about something. 2 minutes later, I'm sorry, you're right, I'm wrong. And literally that's the behavior I used to do. And now I'm not doing it. And it's amazing that, you know, through God's grace maybe, that I'm able to be comfortable and like, if you don't understand me, I don't have to have you to understand where I'm at. You know, I love you and care for you. You're my mother, you're my father, etc. But it's still challenging because they're still my parents, and that comes into my mind. It's like, and I wish they could be different to what they are, you know. But it's letting go, isn't it? Letting go and letting God at the end of the day.
Thinking about what Maddie said about not necessarily fixed boundaries for everybody, but the fluid between people, that's what's been happening with the pandemic and the rules that we've had of how we behave. But at the beginning, everybody was supposed to keep a distance, wear a mask, do all these things that we were supposed to do. And then for various reasons, or the great and the good and the government and the medics and everything, we've all had to get used to the idea that actually everybody's got to find their own level of their boundaries. And we're not used to that really, are we? Because as you say, in certain streets, we're supposed to drive at 20 or 30, or we can even go up to 70. But and you knew where you were, you knew what you were supposed to be doing. Admittedly, you might not always do what you're supposed to be doing, or other people might not, but everybody knew what was expected. Whereas now, with the pandemic, then you never know really what other people want to do, where their boundaries are. Mm. Let's face it, most of us don't even know what our own boundaries should be. And we're having to work together with each other. But that tolerance and sympathy and empathy with how the other person feels as well as how you yourself feel. Mm. Let's hope it rubs off in other fields, not just to do with how we behave vis-a-vis the pandemic regulations and safety.
Yes, it's very interesting that the pandemic, the way that it has created a whole new set of boundaries that we've needed to develop ourselves, I guess. What we are comfortable with, what we're not comfortable with, and having to be in places with people who have different views on the whole thing. I suppose at the end of the day, you have to decide what your values are and what your boundaries are that will allow you to live comfortably with those. And that will sometimes, I suppose, one of the really difficult things, it comes back to that point about saying no, is that we have to be prepared to live with people's upset. And I guess. Most of us don't find that very easy. It's not nice to be out of tune with people who we want to be in tune with, whether it be, you know, in the church community, somebody just asking us to do something, or within, you know, people we don't know terribly well but are part of a group with, or part of our, you know, family structure that we've lived in the whole of our lives. It's difficult, it's uncomfortable to be having to say, I'm sorry, I don't quite see it the way that you do, and I'm going to do something different, and you may not like it, and you may feel negatively towards me. I mean, I suppose on the bit that sort of might bolster us a bit is to look at the contrast on the other side, which is that if we don't keep our boundaries, then actually anything's allowed. I mean, we're saying there are no laws. People can come and take what they like from our house. People can push us around and tell us what to do and where to be if we don't have boundaries. And with it within ourselves, we are seeing ourselves then, or we are feeling that we are a limitless resource for everybody else. I mean, it's like training hard and then running a marathon, and as soon as you get to the end of the marathon, saying, well, I'm going to keep running. You have to draw a line somewhere that says, I need to stop, I need to protect myself. I suppose that for me tips a bit into the idea of Sabbath. If we're thinking of faith terms, you know, it's the understanding that we need to have a Sabbath, we need to have a day off, and we need to stop. And if we don't stop, then we're not going to be able to do the things that we want to do. We need to rest. And that in itself is a boundary, and in a sense could be applied to the difficult places where we find it hard to enforce a boundary with other people. we may get close to saying, well, anything you ask of me, I will do. And if you think about it in those quite extreme terms, obviously that's not going to work. So there has to be a limit somewhere to what we are prepared to do.
Something I've always found quite helpful to remember was when David Shepherd was a young curate, he was giving a tremendous amount of attention to a man who was in a very bad state. And his bishop said to him, how many people do you think you could manage to support at that intensity? Now, okay, if you've decided you're going to really concentrate on that one person and the other people, you're going to hope somebody else helps. But I think it seemed to me a useful point that if you're a professional, and to a certain extent, a clergy person is a professional, you have got to limit the amount of emotional intensity you're putting into one situation. And a phrase I like at the moment is put on your own oxygen mask first. If you aren't okay, you can't help other people. No. So you're actually not doing them any good by knocking yourself out, trying to do too much.
I liked what you said. Sorry, Jonathan, you wanted to reply. Go on.
No, you go ahead.
Now, I was saying, I liked what you said about the Sabbath, actually, because I think, you know, it was put in place for the people. It was put in place so they could, you know, yes, worship God, but take time out to spend time with their families, take time to themselves. And I think, you know, if we view the same for ourselves, you know, it came to mind when you were saying about, it's a time of unplugging. It's a time of self-care. I mean, we can literally unplug, we could turn our phones off, and certainly if we're getting things throughout the week or things in the back of our mind that's making us uncomfortable, it's like, this day is for me, it's for God, it's for me to practice self-love and look after myself. But I think, you know, that's the way, I don't know, it just came to mind, and I think it's, you know, because going on to what you're saying about the putting the oxygen mask on first, it's exactly the same. If we don't look after ourselves, what use are we to other people? And I think it's like, I remember, you know, showing, you know, when I think about loving kindness and showing love to other people, it's like, I can have this in heap loads, truckloads, you know, mountain loads. But giving it to Julian, oh, now that's an interesting thing, you know? It's like, you know, has anyone asked you what you want? And it's very, very interesting when you turn it internally, and it's like, no. Because I'm giving out and I'm not even thinking about myself.
Well, I think we've got to 12:15, and I think that phrase is a really good one to stop with, which is put on your oxygen mask first. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really, really, really good phrase. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
I hope you have a good rest of the day. You've got some lunch coming on or something, have you?
Yes.
Yep.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, have a very good rest of the day, and nice to see you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.